Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Purpose Tune Podcast. The goal of my show is to create valuable content to broaden your knowledge, inspire you, and get you in the right mindset so that you can apply it in your own life to drive impact, generate meaning, and achieve your purpose. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Purpose Tune Podcast. My name is Kong Shang, and I am the host of the show. The goal of my show is to create valuable content to broaden your knowledge, inspire you to act, and get you in the right mindset so you can apply it in your own life to drive impact, generate meaning, and achieve your purpose. Now, I'm so excited about today's guest. Her name is Cici, and she has a Bachelor of Arts in International Studies, Women and Gender Studies from Winona State University in Minnesota, and a Master's of Arts and International Studies with a specialized focus on gender-based violence at the University of San Francisco, California. She interned with the Program Director of International Women's Rights Action Watch at the University of Minnesota, learned the legal framework behind family violence with the international outlook. Cici has worked with Women Ventures and MCCD, as well as organizations that support small businesses. She has had an amazing opportunity to work and volunteer for different organizations in both Zimbabwe and, of course, here in the United States, all focused on the eradication of gender-based violence. Being an advocate and a business consultant, as well as an aspiring writer and scholar, all of the work has informed her journey and as she continues to evolve personally and professionally. So Cici, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Kong. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. You look fantastic. I love your energy. I love just, you know, just everything about you, which really inspired me to really want to connect with you and talk to you about this concept of purpose and meaning. But before we get to this bigger topic of purpose and meaning, how did you get involved in your work in gender studies and in violence against women and all of that?
So here's the short of the long story here. So I, growing up in Zimbabwe, for me, like I want to say that I came out of the womb already kind of like fiery about empowerment. Like, I've always been someone who loves the idea of fairness and justice. And so as I was growing up, I was like bumping into the ways in which misogyny was kind of thrown around, even casually sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be in class and boys would be talking to me like, you talk too much for a girl, or like, you speak so decidedly for a girl. And it would irk me because I didn't understand why it always had to be prefaced with that. And the longer I was around it, the more I felt like, you know, female empowerment was one of the ways in which like I could express how I really do feel about us as human beings as we share this planet together. So it started from like when I was a kid. And then when I moved here to the US and I was able to find a space for myself, because like there was space for me to show up the way that I show up right now. And it was such an easy transition for me that I was able to just go into college and pick right away that I wanted to do something that was very central to gender-based violence. But because I'm a person who loves multidimensionality, I chose a major that was not really like specialized. I was like, I need international studies to keep me open because this is just who I am. Right. So I decided to go with that route of education because that is just a personal ethos of mine that I have is I want to live in a world in which, you know, love becomes the only identity for all of us. You know, that means there is no need for me. That's the world I see or want. Need for me to ever utter the words female empowerment matters because everyone matters.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Especially on that last point about how everyone matters, right? I think all of us want to be seen.
Yeah.
And it ties into our, you know, worthiness and how we feel how people are treating us in terms of like how we're being respected. And so I think there's a lot of work obviously that needs to be done around the world on how we should change the perception of how women are being viewed in society. definitely in America, we've certainly advanced in equality and providing access and opportunities for women to empower themselves to become leaders within their community. In other parts of the world, not so much. And so is that your impact in this world, is to be part of communities and empower women to show up powerfully and get them access to the right connections or resources in order to better themselves?
I mean, I love how you even put it that way, because I think sometimes that is something that we forget. When you live in anywhere where like there's been some progress made in regards to like women and their ability to express their civil and political personalities, you do tend to forget that there's still parts of the world where it's still seen as very unnatural, right, for a woman to say and to walk in her glory as a person. So it is a major part of my walk. It's both a part of my professional and personal ethos that I want for attitudes and perceptions to be changed in any world or any aspect or any part of the world, I mean, that I go into, that we kind of connect each other. Well, thank God for globalization. Right now, the world is a little smaller. So there are parts of the world now where people are getting to see that women are not one-dimensional beings. And if people can look at the ways in which women in America are able to exercise their rights, though, yes, there's still much work to be done, even here in the US. But that progress, right, brings to light that such a thing as an empowered woman does exist. And it doesn't have to be so scary, contrary to what others may believe.
Yeah, that's so how do you build a community where women can show up and get connected and obtain the resources that they need to show up powerfully? Especially in communities that were, let's say, for example, women, yeah, you know, a woman that has always been told most of her entire life that she's not worthy. Like, how do you help someone like that to get to a place where they can find value in being who they are, and that they're worthy of love and that they're a powerful being?
Yeah, that is such a layered question, right? It's super layered, because then we have to go back to the concept of access, right? Mm-hmm. So now it depends like on each woman's personal ethos, because there are some women who really do believe that education isn't really the way that that they will gain a sense of self-worth for themselves. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have to go through the layers of like, now it depends on what you aspire to be as a woman. Mm-hmm. If you're a woman who is completely gratified and satisfied by showing up in the ways that your culture, let's say, may ask you to be, like, for instance, in my culture, women are generally allocated the role of being caregivers. Now, I just knew right off the bat when I was, you know, coming out of the womb that that's not the route that I want to go. Like, I always knew that about myself. And it was harder for me to express that I did not see motherhood or being a wife as an expression of my power as a woman. But I always knew instinctively not to talk down on that path that any other woman would choose. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, if a woman says, for me, being a mother and being a wife is the ways in which I can express my empowerment as a woman and as a partner in a relationship, and then as a human being, you know, in that regard, then, you know, if you can go into sister circles like we do in my culture, like many women are able to go in sister circles with other women who are wives and mothers. And in there, they're able to like talk to each other about the ways in which they are frustrated or feeling like they're not seen by their husbands and children. And they give each other the opportunity to vent and to celebrate each other and to see the worth that they have with those exchanges. Now, for women and girls who are like me now, who are like education all the way, like get me my career, give me the ability to be a solopreneur, an entrepreneur, or who uses business as a way to express my empowerment. You know, again, it's the same, it's just almost like the same concept, going to sister circles where you have other women who share that same personal ethos and professional ethos and that vision that will empower you with the necessary courage to push through with this type of growth, because it's very hard to want to dream for yourself when everybody else seems to base your worth on their own vision of who you are as a woman. So I think it is a constant state of being able to change your mind about what things mean to you and what worth means to you, and then seeking out people who mirror that to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much to unpack what you just said. Where do I even start? You know, I think the notion about self-worth is obviously, I truly believe everybody is born with God-given potential, and we're all powerful beings. It's getting people to realize that they have this ability to make an impact in the world is the challenge for me, which is what the show is really about, is to inspire people to live out their most powerful version of themselves so that they can show up authentically, powerfully, and make the greatest impact in the communities they're part of, right? Because at the end of the day, it's all about making a difference and impact. And for some folks that have this, I don't know what to call it, maybe low confidence or lack of self-belief, or like, you know, like imposter syndrome, right? Like it's these things that really hinder people to really show up 100%. And I myself struggled with that early in my career, in my early 20s. And I get it. It's a journey that everyone is on. For me, where I can really come in is provide people with the type of mindset that's needed in order to change their behavior in ways that makes them believe in themselves, that really anything's possible in terms of how you want to show up. Like, you know, but so often people live in the past and often are focused in the past and not the present and future. And so do you have any tools or any resources that you can share with us in terms of how do we get people to tap into the space to live in the present moment in the future, so that they're considered, you know, powerful beings wanting to make an impact?
Three words for you: right. There is nothing like being able to see like your story on paper. Like it seems like it's probably like the most simplest thing to do. And yet I come from a tradition I come from an oral tradition, telling our story by virtue of like the gift of, or, you know, of being able to speak it out loud is just, I come from that. But written tradition is so, it's so powerful, because when you're able to like see how your story is, you stop thinking that you are some sort of cog in the wheel here, or like you're just some person who's just floating by waiting to die, because like what seems important is like what other people are doing out there, right? Like celebrity world. If you're not a celebrity, then I guess you're not important, right? Or if you're not some political figure, then I guess you're not really doing anything. And yet that is not true, because your story and how you walk this walk, you add a very crucial part to the fabric of society. So I think like being able to write your feelings down, and it doesn't even have to be a book, just even a paragraph of your feelings or your thoughts, and seeing yourself solidified in that way, or let me say memorialized in that way, like you are able to sort of, it really does bring some sense of like, you know what, even if it's just my children who read who I was as Tsitsi, or who I was as Kong, or it's my nieces and nephews, or if it's my friends who just read these few words about me, there's something about that that reminds you, you are an entity among other entities here. You're not just floating by. And once you know that you matter in that regard, it does inform how you show up on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So worth becomes, what energy am I bringing to the table every time I am interacting with other human beings? It stops being so like up here, this big concept, and it comes really back down to the space that matters, our day-to-day interactions. So I think writing, honestly, writing down words and feelings, and even going back sometimes to read them, can really do something to you, to awaken whatever dead parts that exist in you sometimes, because life can systematically wear you down. And it is your duty to revive that within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm sure you've probably been through situations where you feel like you need a bit more inspiration to uplift your soul or to empower you to keep showing up on days when you don't feel like showing up. How do you get yourself to from point A to point B from a state of, I don't feel like I didn't want to show up, but I'm going to push because other people, you know, need me to, they depend on me to show up. How do you get from point A to point B in that?
It is not an easy process, right? Yeah. It is not an easy process. It is a combination of prayer, wine, laughter with friends, mm-hmm. Netflix and chilling sometimes. But then when I really get into the grander aspect of things, honestly, when I think about my nieces and nephews, I'm not a mother, but I'm not, oh, let me correct that because that's culturally incorrect. So my siblings have children. So technically I'm a mother because they have kids. In my culture, like I'm a mom to my nieces and nephews. So it's my nephews and nieces / children who get me out of bed, because I have moments where if I make it about me, I'm not going to get out of bed all the time. But when I think about the purpose of why I'm doing what I'm doing, which is to make sure that they are able to look at Auntie and go, you know, Auntie did, she was trying to make or create some form of blueprint for us to follow. And for whatever girl or boy in my family who believes what I believe, I would want them to know that Auntie was living out her truth as much as she could. Mm-hmm. And so that does get me out of bed. You know, it does really help me to push through, because I have this vision that is beyond me. And I know that I'm only a sojourner. I'm a temporary resident on planet Earth. I'm going to pass by, and I need to be able to like use the time that I have to create something for them that they can follow. But on the other rough days, honestly, when I'm just being purely human, give me some wine, give me some chicken, give me some, let me watch some Netflix, and let me pump myself up a little bit, then I'll get out into the world and face it right. However best I can, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Would you consider them to be your inspiration?
Oh my God, yes. Oh my God, yes. Like they are my absolute inspiration. Like, because when I speak to them, like I have a niece, her name is Wanjala. she reminds me so much of myself. When she's speaking, it's like I see little girl me when she's talking, and I'm always like, I need to make sure that that energy she has space to blossom. Mm-hmm. And because she expresses herself so decidedly, and like I was told back in the day. And so when I see her, I see me, and then I keep having that thought of like, what would I have needed or wanted when I was this girl, you know? And I want to create that and cultivate that for her, mm-hmm. and for my other nieces and nephews, you know, who in their own ways are very similar, but very different expressions of who I am. Mm-hmm. So it is inspiring to see them, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, yes. That's beautiful. Yeah. Sometimes when we look at kids, they remind us of who we were when we were younger. And and then you also wonder, what types of role models did we have growing up? And for me, I didn't really have a role model growing up. And so in my world, I want to be the role model for the younger generation, because I knew growing up that feeling, what it was like. It was a lonely feeling of not being able to have someone to talk to about just day-to-day challenges of being a teenager or a young kid. And so I'm happy that you're able to find some inspiration. How do you, in terms of your work with women and violence and it's especially in the community part of, how do you, I guess we kind of talked about this, but how do you connect with them in a way that makes it safe for them to come to you? Because not everyone want to share their personal story, right? Yeah. That they were abused by their husband, or that they're in this abusive relationship with their boyfriend.
Yeah, I mean, that is a question that is also varied, but I can give you the one answer that remains universal, right? Trust is very culturally specific. So if I go into a Hmong community right now, how you cultivate trust, it's very culturally specific to Hmong people. Mm-hmm. Same with, in my culture, trust is something that is very culturally specific. How you even get to gain a woman's trust to be able to tell you that is very, very different. What I started to learn was getting to a point where you can heal yourself here and be able to be very transparent about the fact that on many levels, we all, and I'm including men in this, have experienced violence. I think we are so used to talking about violence in its very physical form, which is you have to be beaten by someone, and then you've experienced violence. But there's all kinds of violence that exists: mental violence, spiritual violence, emotional violence. So when you really break it down to that point, you can start seeing yourself in these women and start really looking at them as if they are just victims who've experienced something. You can come to them with a sense of humility and an openness, less judgmental, because you sit in the truth of, I, at some level, have experienced violence. And so you come with a certain sense of honesty and come with a willingness to cultivate trust and to let them lead in conversations and for them to stop feeling like you're talking down to them because they've already experienced that. Mm-hmm. So I think it has to come from that sense of humility and that grace and that self-awareness of self in all the ways in which you have been harmed, so that you can start seeing that this journey really is about healing myself and healing the little girl in me, and hoping that I'm reaching down to that other woman's little girl, right? Mm-hmm. And talk about the ways in which she was abandoned and she didn't get to live out the promise that life, offers everyone, but suffering, as we suffer, we don't always get a chance to live out our little girl promises. So really, it is about trust. It boils down to trust and being able to make sure that I cultivate that and create spaces to do so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that your impact in the world? Like, what is your purpose?
Oh, man. My purpose in this world has evolved, because the little girl in me initially, I was viewing violence as my way through, right? Because my frustration and rage against the machine, so to speak, I walked into this walk through that lens of wanting to end violence. And the longer that I've sort of grown up and with the spiritual walk of seeing, I'm still working through this, Kong. Like, I don't know yet if our path on this human planet is to necessarily end suffering or to just lessen it. I don't know yet. But I do know now, from the lens of healing, the journey that I'm on now, that what I want to do is to remind everyone of what I call the unbowed spirit. I believe that in the essence of who we are as human beings, we are unbowed spirits. There is a power to us that is so unconquerable that we are able to face anything. And so if I'm able to tell you or remind you of that part of you, to shine that light, to tell you that it is necessary for you to be here and to exemplify what that is, to be an unbowed spirit, that's how we get through. That's me knowing you, Kong, and how you exemplify the necessary courage for you to do what you're doing, it pours into my cup. I don't necessarily have to understand you or know you deeply, but if I'm able to like just know you exist and you are doing this, I feel like that is the responsibility we have to each other. Just be as unconquerable of a soul as you can be. And someone, it's infectious. And then someone else will be able to see that about themselves and live their own iteration of that. So yeah, I do believe that's my mission now, to remind people of their unbowed spirits. Yes.
That is amazing and so beautiful. How you conveyed it is really to show up as we're truly meant to be.
Yeah. And
giving people the right for them to show up, right?
Yes.
Because without us being a role model and having the courage to step into the best version of ourselves, how can we really encourage other people to do the same? And it goes in our relationships. It goes, you know, with the same with our, you know, our community. We have to find the courage, I think, to really just be who we are and not be, you know, be ashamed of it.
I almost want to challenge listeners too right now, who immediately feel the pressure when they hear a role model, that they go into, oh my God, so that means I have to have everything a certain way. I have to look a certain way or act a certain way. And it's like, no, actually, let's take the pressure off. When we say role model just means, would you listen to you if you were a kid? When you look at yourself in the mirror, would you look at you and go, I would follow that person's path? Mm-hmm. You know, and once you do that, what that is asking you to do really is to just say, look at yourself and how you live and what your ethos is. Mm-hmm. Do you respect that? Is this something you would want to leave as a legacy for whoever is watching and following you? If you are in agreement with that, if your soul is in agreement with that, we're good to go. Mm-hmm. Don't wait to be a Beyonce to feel like you can be influential, right? Like, it doesn't have to be that way. So role model just means, do you do things that make you respect you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes when we think about like the impact we want to make in the world, we often compare ourselves actually to the people that have already accomplished so much in their career, and how they're showing up powerfully to make a difference in the community. Instead of comparing ourselves, we have to think about the steps we need to take every day or every hour of the day to change our behaviors and form an image of who we want to be. Absolutely. Because it is a journey to this version that we want to be. And we have to be patient with ourselves. We have to love ourselves. We have to be compassionate when we're making these steps and changes to improve our lives, so that we can be a role model, a champion, in an agent of change in the communities we're part of. Yeah. And so what advice would you give my audience listening to this show as it comes to how we need to tap into the space of power and ability to make a difference?
Gosh, you know, the biggest one for me right now, I'm going to give the advice that I'm currently walking myself. It's only fair that I do that.
Well, everybody's on their own personal journey, right? The greatest achievers, the greatest change agents also have their own personal journey that they're walking on. And so
we're all
on this path of continual improvement.
Absolutely. The advice that I would give would be trust your own voice. Mm-hmm. It truly is the beginning of truest joy and the end of inner suffering. It really just truly is. Like, when you get to a point where you can look at you in the mirror and bet on yourself and be able to be like, I trust what you have to say. I trust your voice because, man, like what you said, because we're all walking different paths. If you're out here looking for anybody else's voice, you are going to easily get thrown off on what your journey really is. Mm-hmm. So I have been at the mercy of that very thing, right? I let imposter syndrome sort of get in the way. Mm-hmm. And then once that voice comes, it's not my truest voice though. It's everything else. So I think trusting your inner voice, it really truly is the greatest gift you could give to yourself and to people around you, because you stop lying so much. Like once you start trusting yourself, you deception and illusions are easy to detect.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we live in a culture where we want to please for, you know, we meaning, I think many people live in a culture where they want to please people. They want to please their parents, their family, their friends. And going back to your point earlier, when we can listen to that inner voice that tells us you have to follow your heart.
Yeah.
That is where the journey really begins. And oftentimes, many people don't listen to that. They ignore it because they believe that the path to true happiness is by making other people happy, and they neglect their own happiness. Yeah. And that is why we see people that go through depression, anxiety, and a lack of purpose and meaning is because they've been bought into this culture and are now a product of a culture that is can be toxic. And I don't remember who said this quote, but it was along the lines of, if the culture you're in can't be changed, then you've stayed too long in this culture, and you have to find a way to either one, leave that culture and find a new culture that supports your values, beliefs, and attitudes, or two, have the courage to form your own culture.
Yeah.
Ooh-wee. And so it's so beautiful in a sense of that we have the option to not live in a world of expectations from other people and them defining our happiness, because we only have one shot at this life. And why not make the best of it? Live in our own terms and our own happiness. Follow our dreams. Like the people that make incredible products and companies, like the Steve Jobs of the world, for example, they bend reality.
Yeah.
They don't live in reality.
Yeah. Right?
And they're considered weird at first, but they're so brilliant because they live in a world that's completely different from the mass.
Yeah.
And it's because they have the courage and this intuition to listen into, tap into the space of intuition, listen to, you know, the authentic version of themselves to really then bring that out to life. And that is the beauty of life is to create a life of meaning and fulfillment by designing it yourself. Like we are the leader in our own life. We are the creative director producing a film, and we get to direct, you know, how we want to star in our own film.
Oh my gosh, how I can completely relate to the quote you gave there about culture and being able to create your own culture is I always say that I love living life as a Black woman. I love living life as an African woman. I love that I was born and given this body, and because it does absolutely inform how I make my decisions. But what I've also promised myself is that this Black body and this womanhood I'm in is only effective when I use it as the tool that I believe it to be, right? Because I know that sometimes I can also be confined in this body. And so if I'm not careful, right, Black womanhood becomes this this burden when it is something that I can, as a matter of fact, defy, especially if the definition of Black womanhood or African womanhood is being used as a weapon. So I believe that the culture of being an African woman emboldens me, it strengthens me, and that is as much power as I choose to take out of it. Mm-hmm. Everything else that is tacked on or put on it is something that I'm like, oh, no. That's when I get out of the culture of being confined into it, because I refuse for that to be the only way that you see me as a human being. Mm-hmm. So I really do believe that if you can function, if anything I'm doing, or even as an academic, I love being an academic, but that is not all I am. You know, I am a spiritual being as well. But the tool of being an academic, of being a scholar, has informed a lot of how I've made my choices, how I've challenged many existing forms of cultures. Mm-hmm. And it's emboldened me. So I really do believe, yeah, there's a place for you to love culture. But if that is now beginning to suffocate you, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Find a way to get out of that and create something else so you could be the Steve Jobs of the world, or the Wangari Maathai, Vandana Shiva. These are all these women that I love who, yes, culturally they are known as either strictly an Indian woman or strictly a Kenyan woman, but how they implemented their beliefs demanded that they not only be what culture wanted them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. What do you say to people that say, don't get too tied into your identities, because that could hinder your performance or success?
I agree completely. I agree.
So earlier you mentioned you're a proud Black woman, and I love that. And you've realized that being who you are and being comfortable in your own, you know, in your own being is how you want to show up in this world, and you celebrate all of who you are, which is great. And I think a lot of people need to do that. It's just be comfortable in their own skin, right?
Yeah.
So, but going back to that notion or that question I was asking earlier, how do we manage showing up in a way that we're proud of ourselves, but also making sure that we're not just tied into one identity? Because we're dynamic beings, right? And
absolutely.
I think how we show up demands the type of person that we are in different environments. So, for example, Oprah, right? Like, she, of course, grew up in a era where African-Americans were treated horribly, horribly, horribly. And she was able to tap into the space of not viewing herself as, you know, always a Black woman.
Yes.
Right? Like, she tapped into the space of spirituality and not having, my understanding is, not having her identities tied into the progress of her career. Like, she was able to tap into the space of humanity and spirituality, which bonds everyone of different creed, you know, color, you know, gender, together to say we're all connected somehow.
Yeah. Here's how I'll answer that question. When I moved to the US, I remember the first time that the N-word was used towards me. And because I had not grown up being reminded that I was Black every day, like you are here when you live in this country, the way that word even landed on me, like, I remember looking at the person like, oh, so you are actually trying to solicit a reaction out of me. You're actually trying to hurt me by using this word. And because I grew up where with the privilege that I've had, or I call it geographical proximity to my Blackness, because, you know, I've, having been raised on the continent, born there and raised there, I had the opportunity to not have to grow up with Blackness or this Black skin as like a wound necessarily, like a pain point. it was something that was celebrated and something that was normal. So when I came to the US, I actually had a really hard time like understanding how to navigate being Black, because it was something that I had not necessarily grown up with. But what I also noticed about the American way of life is America can be such a vortex, right? There tends to be such a siloed way of being, or siloed conversations about certain things that happen here, that people do not know how to hold multiple truths all at the same time. So is it true that I'm a powerful African woman? Absolutely. Is it also true that I am a human being? Yes, it is. Is it also true that I am many other things, just tack them on? Yes. So it is from this place that I create, or I'm able to sort of move very fluidly through identities, because multiple truths to me are true all at once. So I don't have to be confined to just being, you know, a Black woman. I think it is absolutely, that's the thing that's unnatural, to believe that we could ever be tied down to one thing. I don't believe in that at all. I just believe that I can exist and walk as an African woman and still also walk into a room, be an intellect among other intellects, and walk into another room and be able to, you know, use another part of my identity, because we are multifaceted. Mm-hmm. It's everyone else's like fear of you being or existing in that way, not knowing how to define you, mm-hmm. or to tack on just one identity marker on you and feel like they're comfortable just saying that one thing about you, mm-hmm. that causes all this dissonance and rift, mm-hmm. you know? So for me, I absolutely believe that multiple truths can be true all at once. That's why I can identity, my truest form of identity, I think I said this at the beginning, is love. That's my truest form of identity. Now, can I have other identity markers? Sure. Mm-hmm. But my essence, my truest identity is love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you mentioned a good point about like how people to show up and be connected through love is, I think, the general message I'm getting from you. And that often reminds me of a situation that I had encountered with a former colleague, who she had shared with me privately that, and she's, you know, she's white, and she, you know, grew up in a small town and that didn't have much diversity, and shared with me that she is just fearful of Black women because they come off as aggressive.
Yeah.
And I challenged her and said, look, like, I know a lot of, you know, African-American women that are leaders in their own right, and they're beautiful, beautiful souls. And I'd love to get you connected to them, just to get you, you know, you the experience to see what, you know, African-American women are like. And so I introduced her to a few friends.
Yeah.
Who are, you know, African-American females, and they got connected, and she made friends with one of them, like really good friends with one of them.
Yeah.
She's like, Kong, like, thank you so much for, you know, leverage your connection and introducing me to a world that I would have never experienced. And I think a lot of it, people are fearful because of the lack of experience and interaction with people of different backgrounds. And also, you know, ignorance, right? There's a lack of education. And I think some of the reasons why we have, certain part of the country where people hold negative views on others based on their race is because they don't have the education and the experience.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, we as people of color or as leaders within our community have to show up and give them a different perspective to allow for that space for them to come to us and say, you know, I'm struggling with this, to understand your community, and I want to have a dialogue with you. And I think what we're missing today is having a proper dialogue based on our connected humanity and mm-hmm. respect and dignity for one another. And so that's beautiful.
That's why those siloed conversations I was mentioning are really at the helm of why we don't get to really see each other, because we have siloed conversations around race, right? Because there's this fear of like, what do you say and what do you not say? And we need to be able to respect that not everyone is willing to be a teacher in regards to, you know, what it is to be from a Hmong culture or to be from a Zimbabwean culture. But when you do find a willingness, and then if you have an apology at the ready at your mouth, I think you're going to be okay. Because the thing is, if you fear offending someone, you're not going to be able to interact with people. I'm not encouraging purposefully going out there, of course, to and disrespect people. What I'm saying is, if you are afraid to engage in conversation because you are afraid that you're going to offend someone by asking a question, be able to check in with yourself and be ready that someone is not going to be willing to answer your question, and that should be okay with you. And for those who want to engage in the process of being able to teach you something, then be grateful for that too. And again, have an apology at the ready, because you're not always going to know if the thing you're asking or saying is the right thing. But fear has just become as it always has been, you know, causing havoc in how we talk to each other, how we see each other, because there are just as many angry white people as there are angry Black people, because again, we are not one thing.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think, you know, not having a generalization or stereotyping people is really a good starting point in forming those connections that allows for productive dialogues and conversations, yeah. For sure. Yeah. I know we're about that time, so I do want to ask you, where can people find you should they choose to connect with you based on this episode?
My writing journey is flourishing, or at least I am choosing for it to flourish on Substack. Substack it's super amazing. It's like Instagram for writers. I am so happy that I got introduced to this website. I'm able to just sort of, for those who still believe in the process of engaging in a complete thought, I've gotten an opportunity to just write some of my work there. So my newsletter is called Unbowed Spirit Newsletter. So you can just look me up there.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Tsitsi, thank you so much for spending your time with us today. I really appreciate your insight as it relates to how we can get more people inspired to tap into, you know, they're the best version of themselves and live a authentic and fulfilling life while all making an impact in the communities that they're a part of. Folks, I would encourage you to connect with Tsitsi if you have an urge to. As you all know, she's a beautiful soul, and I'm very grateful to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kong. And I am looking forward to seeing how your legacy unfolds as you do this work that you're doing. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. All right. Take care.
Thanks.